that's all right with everybody. So, welcome to the virtual night out on Posture. We ran this last week, and obviously there were so many of you wanted to do it, so I'm running it again. And one of the first things I want to talk to you about is exactly what posture is. So on your training, you and obviously reading into stuff, we have the very traditional models of posture that came from Kendall. And they were our hyperlordosis, our kyphosis, our sway back, and our ideal. But the problem that we have is things evolve, things change. I mean, they were, I think, the book I have, I think they published it in the 1960s. So obviously we've had huge changes in our lifestyle, and our posture has changed. So posture, in a way, those four types are no longer as applicable. So what I want to talk to you tonight about is what we see nowadays and, you know, how it's affected by our lifestyle and so on. So first of all, what I want you to think about is, what posture do you see? What issues with posture do you see in your classes? And you can either unmute yourself and shout them out to me, or you can put them in the chat box, because I want to get you involved in some way. So what sort of imbalances, what restrictions do you regularly see in your classes? So anybody?
Kyphosis.
So I'm going to take those words out for a moment, Susie. So what? No, you're fine. So what you're saying is that you see an exaggerated thoracic curve, that really rounded back. Perfect. So no, that's the first thing we see. What do you see, Nikki? I can see you there now.
Give me 2 minutes and I'll tell you. I've just had to get my friend out the door. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry, Nikki. You're fine. What else do you see, Susie, then? Or Sam or Liz?
So I see a lot of restriction in the upper spine.
Yeah.
Hunched shoulders.
Yeah.
Forwards, the head's forwards.
Perfect. So we've got forward head. We've got the excessive flexion in the thoracic spine. Yeah. Anything else?
I'm going to say lumbar lordosis.
No, but you're fine. It's more getting you away from the postural, those traditional.
Yeah.
So, perfect. Now,
that come in and have that kind of...
Very much an arch lumbar spine.
Yeah.
Okay, you can say hyperlordosis, but I'm trying to get us away from those postural types. So, excessive curve in the lumbar spine. Now, Susie, do you see it when they're seated or only when they're standing?
Usually mainly when they're standing.
Perfect. Okay, so this is going exactly where I want it to go. So we're seeing, love it when a plan comes together. So we're seeing excessive head, forward head, excessive kyphosis, or, you know, that exaggerated thoracic curve. We're seeing an excessive lumbar curve when they stand, but not necessarily when they're seated. Anything else?
Locked knees.
Yeah. Okay, so hyperextended knees. I take it when they're standing.
Yeah. With legs straight out front.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? Sam, do you need to unmute yourself? Let me know if you do. I'm just going to unmute you, Sam, just in case you feel as I'm not letting you talk. But obviously, ask any questions. Anything else? You're going to see where I'm going in a moment. If you think of anything else, just let me know. But what we have, so I'll just run through them again. Oh, sorry, go on, Liz.
Sam.
Oh, sorry,
I'm figuring out the technology.
Don't worry. I think yours gives me feedback. Like, I get a repeating echo when I listen to yours for some reason, Sam. Is there anything else you want to add, Sam?
Standing, not so much when they're sitting, but a lot of hip hiking, also twisting.
Yeah, okay, so you see some rotation in the pelvis, which leads to that sort of hip hitching. Good, good. So, I'm going to keep talking now. Sam, can I get you to mute yourself again? Is that okay? Perfect. It's only so then I don't get that feedback. So, running through what we've got. Forward head. Kyphosis, so that exaggerated thoracic curve. Only when they're standing do we see an excessive lumbar curve. And as Sam said, we sometimes see some rotation and so on. Perfect. Now, I'm going to take you back. I'm going to tap on something which is a screen share so you can see my screen, because I want to show you the picture that we had that I, let me just tap present to everyone. That I showed you to sort of highlight this. Okay, so if we look, can you all see that picture of the sort of evolution of man, the sort of cartoony thing? And what I want you to look at is with that final posture that we are seeing there at the end with the guy on the computer, that is the posture we see nowadays. Okay, in a way you can strip it all back. I mean, obviously it's very general and we still get the odd thing that is for the individual, but the majority of clients we see have this posture. Okay, so you can see on that picture there, we've got the forward head. We've completely lost the natural curves of the spine. We've got an incredibly increased thoracic curve. We've got no lumbar spine. So hold that thought, Susie, about what you said about the lordosis for a moment. We've got no hip extension. Okay, so a lack of hip extension. And we lose ankle dorsiflexion. So in a way, what I'm going to suggest to you tonight is the majority of people who come to us have this posture. Okay. They have, and you can just see that. And when you look at that final posture, which one of the other postures matches it?
Beginning.
Yeah, perfect. So if you look, that first picture of the chimpanzee is mirrored to what we have there, what we've become. Okay. Now, what you have there is, when we were a chimpanzee, okay, before we evolved, we used our hands to walk. Okay, chimpanzees use their hands to walk. So it's not a problem to be in that position. But as humans, we are the only animal that has lumbar and thoracic curves. Okay. And the relationship between those two curves allows us to have the reciprocal movement, which means that we're efficient as bipedal animals, as walking on 2 feet. So in order to walk well on 2 feet, we need our lumbar curve and we need our thoracic curve to work in tandem to give us that efficient movement. But when we sit down, we lose those curves. Now, I'm going to go back to me and picture of me. Okay. And going back to your point, Susie, because you sort of think, well, you see a lot of tight lumbar spines. Now, I'm going to see if you can see me. What happens is, if I stand up here, whoop, let me see if you can see me. So if I stand up here, I'm hoping you can see me. And what happens is when, if I've been sat down in my chair, okay, the front of my hip gets very tight. It gets locked. Okay, it just works rubbish. So it just gets locked down. So when I go to stand, what I do is they pull me and bring me into hyperlordosis. Can you see that? Yeah? So I'm sat in a chair, gets very locked at the front. These incredibly powerful muscles that are down the front of my thigh, when I go to stand up, the easiest thing for them to do is not let go, and I create the lordosis. Does that make sense? So our lordosis that we see, the hyperlordosis we see in clients is not due to curvature in the lumbar spine, it's due to that locked out position at the front of the hip. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. So that's why when people sit down, we don't see the lordosis. Do you know what I mean? If that was the case, we'd see it when they were sat down. And obviously I'm talking very general point of view. But what I want to say to you is that the average person, okay, that we see in our classes, guess how many hours a day they sit down? Any guess?
Yeah.
9 to 12 hours a day we sit down, which is just incredible. And even now we're sat down. And what I've actually started to do is stand and do watch videos, do as much as I can standing. When I started looking at this, for myself, who I think I'm quite active, I still count the amount of hours that I sit down, and it is horrific. Because if you think somebody wakes up, they sit down to eat their breakfast, they then get in the car, they're sitting down. They then go to work, they're sitting down. They have their lunch, they're sitting down. You come home, you eat your dinner, you sit down. You then sit on the sofa for a couple of hours to watch television. So it's a huge amount of time of sitting. So what did we decide to do when it started becoming such an issue? Is we built the perfect chair to sit in that meant we could sit still for even longer, but comfortably. Okay, so that position we held, sat there, no hip extension, ankle lack of complete dorsiflexion, and rounding down to work on a computer. Now the problem is not that whether we sit perfectly or not, okay? The problem we have is what happens with our fascia, okay? And in a way, still, it's a shame that our anatomy that we have to teach is so muscle-bound, because really, fascia is what we're created with. It's what's most affected by movement. And in a way, I'd love you to move away from muscle and more into fascia, because fascia's in everything. It surrounds everything in our bodies. And I've got a picture here, and there's an amazing, let me go back into our screen share. There's an amazing video on YouTube, which is called, where is it? I've got Strolling Under the Skin. And that's where I've taken these photos from. It's absolutely amazing. And let me just show you this picture, because when we first started thinking about fascia a few years ago, it was mainly, we were looking at dead fascia. So it was the whole cotton wool, you know, sort of look of fascia. Whereas this video, and here I've got a couple of things to show you here. So this on YouTube, this whole film called Strolling Under the Skin, shows fascia much more as if it was like a cobweb with dripping honey just being poured through it. And you can see it here, it's not like that cotton candy stickiness. This is something which is incredibly fluid. And here's another one that showed it. And just very, you know, so liquidy and just amazing. So if you do wanna, you know, look at this, it's you just need to Google Strolling Under the Skin and it will come up for you. And it just shows you all the ways and of how fascia is and so on. It's amazing. But what fascia does is fascia is incredibly dynamic. And as we move, fascia changes. You almost think of it as like modeling clay. And as you know, as you move clay, it will move in the direction you're pulling it and in the direction you move it. And fascia is exactly like that. It almost reprints the body constantly. So if I'm sat in a chair for 12 hours, no matter how perfect that chair is, my fascia is being told to look like a chair. So my body will model itself on being a chair. So I will become a chair. And that's where you can then see these tendencies we're seeing in our clients of the forward head, the roundedness through the thoracic, that complete close down of the hip and inability to extend. The feet being, you know, kept out of that mobility of the ankle. And as you were saying, Sam, about the rotation, I think that's often because we line up our computer to one side, or we sit on the sofa one-sided, or we cross our legs. All those things can lead to that rotated pelvis and that hip hitching. And what we've got to think of is we are what we practice. We are the sum of all we do. So 1 hour a week of Pilates is not going to be enough to change this amount of time that we're sedentary. And what's even more frightening in a way is the problem isn't that we sit, the problem is that we don't move, okay? So there was a huge study done in Brazil a while back, and it was all over social media about can you get up off the floor without using your hands and how it affects what age you're going to die. But this study, do you remember that study? Yeah, and if you want, I'll send you the link to the whole study. But it was a really excellent study done. And what they showed was that how well we get up off the floor has direct effect on our longevity. So they sort of scored people on if you had to put down one hand, if you had to put down two hands. And this sort of showed your aging process. And this is why from this study, this is why there's so many more knee replacements, hip replacements and so on, because the medical industry know that as soon as you become immobile, it's going to affect your mortality. So everybody's trying to get everybody moving much sooner and much quicker. So what our problem is we've already spoken about how the average person sits between 9 to 12 hours a day. If you then add into that we generally lie on a bed for another 7 hours a day, you're talking about the majority of people are 20 hours a day not moving. And that's really, really scary, because if we're not moving, our whole systems are not moving. Our fascia is being molded into this stagnant position. And it's affecting our longevity. So I always think that as Pilates instructors, you know, our 1 hour a week is not enough. We've got to try and encourage people to move much more. And it doesn't have to be formal exercise. It's not about going to a class and doing this. It's just simple movement. So one of the things that I've done for quite a while is I never answer my phone sitting down. If somebody calls me, no matter what I'm doing, I stand up and I walk around. And just something like that, when I've, you know, like today I've had 6 calls come in, means I've probably walked around quite a lot, you know. And often, I mean, Susie, you know what I'm like. I often hang out washing as we're having a chat, and I'll be doing, you know, just bobbing around, you know, trying to just keep moving. The other thing is, you know, for people who, you know, fly a lot, who are a lot, you know, on aeroplanes or something, or just sat at their desk, have them drink water. That will mean that every hour you have to get up and go to the toilet. And it's not, you become much more creative when you move. It gets everything going. So a lot of places now are thinking of having walking meetings. So instead of having a meeting in a boardroom, people are actually going walking. And they find that it helps creativity. This is a few years old now, but the lady who coined the phrase sitting is the new smoking is called Niloufa Merchant. And she did a great short TED talk on how sitting is our new smoking. And she speaks of how, you know, she started holding her meetings while out walking. We don't need to sit down. And as I say, sitting down stagnates us, not just creatively, but also physically. So anything that we can do with our clients to sort of get them moving, just small triggers that means that, you know, that we can somehow move away from this incredibly sedentary lifestyle that is having such a negative effect. And there's a whole lot more research gone on about how it affects our blood pressure, our digestive system, just the whole thing. So from our point of view, we need to be really looking at creating movement, and that's what Pilates does so well. But obviously we've got these certain areas we need to address. Has anybody got any questions so far? Just while we have a little pause. Go on, Sam. Oh, Sam's gone again. Oh. Anybody got any questions so far? No? Would you agree with me so far? Anybody not agree? Maybe you can not agree?
I completely agree.
Yeah. And I think... Go on, Susie. Go on. What were you saying?
No, it all really makes sense. I just haven't thought of it like that before. You're so stuck in the way things That's yeah. really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that I'm not saying that everybody's the same, but if we think the majority of our clients, what we do, I know that some can be more active than others, but if you actually add up the amount of sitting we do, it's incredible. And I think that it really simplifies things for us. If instead of trying to look at, because so many times you would do a static posture analysis, but then the way the person moves, you think, oh, hang on, I didn't expect you to do that. And it's because I think we look at posture, we were looking at posture as a snapshot and trying to fit it into a box, instead of thinking, well, hang on, what do you do for the majority of your time? And that's what affects your posture, not necessarily, I mean, we all have sort of hereditary factors, but actually it's much more what we do in, day out. And as I say, we are the sum of all we do. So if we sit for the majority of our time, we're going to have those postural issues from that position. Yeah. So the great thing is we can change this, because as I say, fascia really is so dynamic. It responds to movement. We can start moving more and our fascia will change. It's not just stuck in a box and that's it. It changes. So first of all, I think we need to give people those... Nikki, you make me laugh. We need to... it's the little things we need to give people. So I don't know if you can think of anything else apart from what I said, but just it's our homework that we need to give people, those little move and do this. Just, you know, I mean, even though I don't have a watch, Apple watches that tell people to stand up. It sounds ridiculous that we should need something like that, but people really do like them, you know, and that little alarm, up they stand, move about. But it's things like, as I say, I was watching a couple of videos and I stood up and sort of like swayed side to side instead of just sat watching, because I don't need to sit and watch things. The other thing to think of is the more uncomfortable the surface you have to sit on, the more likely you are to move. So what can be great is, you know, when you see people who strip back their houses and they take away chairs, not quite, I don't know if I quite go to that extreme, but, you know, making yourself sit on the floor when you know you're going to be there for a while. So for the example, I was doing a call the other day and it was a Google Hangout call. And so I sat on the floor and chatted, which meant that I constantly moved because I was slightly uncomfortable. And so I moved around. And it's things like that that I think we need to encourage. It's, you know, that just small changes that people can make that will encourage them to move more. You know, it's amazing that people get so annoyed when they can't park directly outside their house or directly outside the supermarket door, you know, things like that. And, you know, it's ridiculous. What were you going to say, Nikki?
I tell all of my clients that walk further, refunction.
Yeah.
Further.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be something that costs you money. You know, it's just that constant movement that we really need to get. So
one of the... One of the things that you yesterday to the go that seemed really effective with people in my classes is that when they're sitting watching TV, just trying to get them to sit on the floor for only a few minutes at a time with their legs straight. And because most of them have such restricted hamstrings,
yeah,
as well as their hip extensors, it really surprises them that they can't for more than about a minute.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's been really effective.
Yeah, and
to think about how they're sitting.
Yeah, that's brilliant, Rose. And not only just get them to do that, when they start feeling uncomfortable, tell them to just change position. And just change position. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like the perfect chair. That lovely ergonomical chair that helps us to sit still even longer. You don't need that. Do you know what I mean? It's the movement we need, not the ability to sit perfectly and not move. So, yeah, exactly. Brilliant, Rose. Brilliant. And so going back to the things we see in our classes, in a way, it simplifies a whole lot of things for us. We need to work on neck mobility. We need to improve thoracic and rib cage mobility. We need to improve hip extension, and we need to improve ankle mobility. So there, in a way, it strips it right back to really trying to focus on those points. And I really do think if you do that, the alignment that we can get and the movement we can get will be so much better. And I think one of the great things the most amazing things about being a Pilates instructor is instead of us trying to box people and so on, just taking the time to look. And what you will see with people is they have strategies and restrictions in their posture. And as I say, for the majority of people, it's going to be a lack of hip extension, lack of thoracic and rib cage mobility, and ankle dorsiflexion issues. So, but when we look at those restrictions, we can then help people find ways of overcoming it. And what I want you to consider is restrictions can be two things. They can either be structural or they can be strategic, okay? So when somebody has a structural restriction, and actually these are less common than you think, a structural restriction are things like torn ligaments, an actual prolapse disc, not a history of a prolapse disc, an actual actively prolapsed disc, a fracture, things, a break, tendonitis, things like that. Things that are structurally, that need medical intervention, okay? And they're things that we don't often see. We see them a bit, but the majority of restrictions we see are not structural. They're what we call strategic. And it's when a person has created a certain strategy to find movement. So going back to standing up, because I've sat in a chair for 9 hours a day, whoop, this is rubbish, I need to find a different way of doing this. So say I've sat in a chair for so many hours a day and I suddenly stand up, because the front of my hip is so locked, it pulls my lumbar spine into extension. That's a strategy, okay? There's nothing that is structurally making that happen. It is simply that my strategy is, instead of trying to get these front of my hip longer, it's much easier for me to just arch my back, and that's what I do, okay? So as Pilates instructors, the most amazing thing is we can help people find better strategies of movement. And you'll have seen this, you'll have seen somebody walk into the class who cannot move their lumbar spine. They'll come in, but you can use cues and hands-on, and it's like a light bulb movement. Oh, that's what you mean. And suddenly they move in the way you want them to. But often, sometimes it takes much longer. So it's things like, I think one of the most important things we can teach people is squatting. I mean, everybody talks about squatting, but it's the most fundamental movement that we should be able to do. And it's a proper squat. I would say we have sort of Eastern squats and Western squats. And Western squats are just rubbish. It's where our heels lift and our knees roll in and forwards. Or we have the Eastern squat, which is, where the feet stay flat and you get that really comfortable position that people stay in. So I'm going to get you all to stand up. I can only see two of you. But if you stand up, let's have a look at your Eastern squats. So I'm going to move my iPad to the floor, my thing to the floor. So, and what we should be able to do, there we go, take your feet quite wide. I don't care how wide your feet go, okay? Just get them as wide as you want them to do. And then what I want you to do is squat all the way down to the floor. Okay, and try and get all the way down. Now, I can only talk for me, but what I notice immediately is my feet roll in. Okay, and my knees are pushing inwards, and my thigh bones are sort of turning in a bit, because I am shocking at this, because I don't practice it enough. Okay, so that is me getting into my strategic restriction. I've still got down here, so I'm quite happy, but it's not in the best possible technique. Okay, so it's not going to stay comfortable for long. Come back up for me. I know, I had to push myself up a bit there as well. So what I want you to now think is let me teach you a better strategy. Just start squatting down again. Okay. And I want you to just feel, do you feel that you're pushing forwards into your knees? Okay, I know that I am a little bit, and I'm not sitting back quite as much as I should. Come back up for me. Now, this may work, and it may not work. There's something called bone rhythms that I haven't spoken to you really about before. And what it is at the hip, okay, I want you to think about your thigh bone coming into the hip socket, all right? And we have a rhythm there, not just flexion, extension, and so on. What happens instead is that as I lower, it's almost like a jam jar. I'm trying to screw the lid off a jam jar. And what happens is, as I go down, my thigh bone should rotate out as my hip bones rotate in. And I can see immediately how much lower Nikki's getting. Did that work? How did you do, Susie? Try it again. So what I always think of is like a jam jar, Susie. So as you lower, let's just start with the thigh bone. As you lower, your thigh bone should spin outwards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? Now come back up for me. Come back up for me. Now, as you lower, your thigh bones go out, but the hips rotate in. So they always go in and back. So your tailbone moves backwards.
Yes.
Yes? Ha ha! Perfect! And back up. Okay, so it's like a jam jar. And this happens at your knee to your tibia. It will happen at your shoulder. Okay, these spirals, these twisting movements are what happens. But you can feel, I can see, I've not rolled in as much. Yeah, have you got it, Nikki?
Yeah.
Did that work better? So, did that work better?
I think so.
Yeah. So,
yeah, definitely.
It's something I can, how did you find that, Rose? Yeah, yeah. And it's something that we can explore more. I can always do other work on that for you. But what we did there is we overcame a strategic restriction that you had with that movement through the hips, that relationship, that bone rhythm between the femur and the pelvis. And we can do that for all sorts of things. We can do it for shoulder work. We can do it for, as I say, what you would end up doing is, if I take it further, and I feel bad doing it like this, I really need to get my hands on you. But the spiraling happens that as you squat down, the hip bones come in, the femur goes out, the tibia rolls in. Okay? So that sort of rhythm, often, for me, for example, with my feet rolling in, that if I then focus on that spiraling of the tibia and the femur, that would then help that. But also, one of the main things is you need to work on ankle dorsiflexion. Because even as you're sat there now, I know I'm doing it, I'm up on my toes. So I've lifted my heels, I'm up on my toes, and I'm completely losing that flexion, that dorsiflexion at my ankle. Which leads to the calf being tight. And then obviously, if I live my life, and it's not even in high heels, those of you that read the blog that I did on the Trinity, your trainers nowadays generally have about an inch heel in them. And so you're constantly having that lack of ankle dorsiflexion going on. So all those things mean that really natural movement pattern of being able to just drop into a squat is just lost, which means that it's going to affect my ability to get up and down off the floor, which is going to affect my ability, my longevity. So it's all linked. So in your classes, what I suggest you do is look for where the restriction is and see if it's a strategic one. See if it might be a structural one, but See if it's a strategic one. And that's where we use our cues, we use our movement to overcome that. And what you need to think of is anti-chair positions. So in your classes, and I'm going to do this at the convention next year, I'm going to do an anti-chair masterclass, I think. And that's what you need to think of. What movements can I do? You know, you've got all these people in front of you, you've been sat at a desk all day. What can you give them that is an anti-chair position? So there's one move that's a complete anti-chair move. What is it? In the mat work repertoire. Sorry, I should say that. In the mat work. Come on, Nikki. I can see Nikki's going, come on. What was that?
Double leg kick.
Oh, close. Close. Take it away to a single. Brilliant. Single leg kick.
Single, really?
Yeah. Because with your double leg kick, you're moving in and out of extension. With your one leg kick, you're holding that beautiful thoracic extension. Do you know what I mean? And you've then got the kicking coming in. Yep, but double leg kick I'll take as well. I'll take it as well. So what I've done actually today is I've written a class plan on steps to success of a single leg kick. And what I'm going to do, because I think with the class plans it's tricky because you get them and you almost don't know what I want out of you for them. So I'm going to also audio record me discussing the plan and saying, you know, this is what I want here, this is what I would cue, these are the cues I'd use. So that class plan, I hope, will really help. But so in your classes, obviously we've got the repertoire and it's great and you could stay lovely and stick to your repertoire. But if you're looking at meeting the needs and goals of your clients, we have to consider anti-chair positions. We have to get the thoracic spine moving, not just in extension, but in rotation and lateral flexion. Because it, for a lot of people who live like in that forward flexion, going into extension is really hard, okay? Because it's almost the anti-movement to what they want. But always remember, all the spinal movements, bless you, all the spinal movements will aid each other. So if I can't extend well, just rotate more, laterally flex more, and the extension will get there. And obviously, you know, keep extending as well, but don't just try and extend, because the other spinal planes of movement will help the extension. We need to teach people how to get up and down off the floor better. So I would, you know, in your classes, say to people, I just want you to stand up in your own way, but try not to put your hands down. Do you know what I mean? Or try and just, you know, depending on the client, but, you know, encourage people to do that. We need to work on ankle mobility much more and really trying to find that dorsiflexed position. And obviously hip extension, huge, 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 which means then it will ease off the lumbar spine when we're standing and help that. So the other thing to think of, by the way, is that fascia, when you create a new position, it does need you to hold it. Some people say about 3 minutes, but I think if I ask people to just stay still in my class for 3 minutes, they go mad. So what I want you to think about a little bit more is, those of you who've got the thoracic spine class I taught on Saturday, it's things like, you know, going over into your side bend and just hold and breathe so that you're allowing the fascia time to find that new position, but then come out of it and then repeat it. Do you know what I mean? But consider holds in your movements, add breathing to it, but just allow that space to be found and held for a little bit of time. So yes, that's really what I wanted to say on posture. It might be different than what you thought I was going to say, but I think in a way we just need to strip it back, get people moving, and consider those anti-chair positions that we can do. So any questions, anybody, or any thoughts? Yeah.
Hips.
Yeah.
I've got a lady who's sort of African Caribbean origin in my class.
And yeah.
They tend to have quite an exaggerated posture in that area.
Yeah.
Should we be able to completely open that up? or is it always going to be a bit more restricted?
No, no, it should be able to be opened up definitely. And you think, Liz, that we're all supposed to be able to squat down like that and stand up tall. Do you know what I mean? So have a look. There's always going to be an exaggeration in the lumbar curve, you know, more than we'd see in other cultures, because that's just, you know, it's just the hereditary facts in that. But the movement should still be there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the problem, is that the static picture, you would think, oh, that's a really exaggerated lumbar curve. But the movement we should be able to create should still be lovely and open. Does that make sense? Anything else? Anybody else got a question or any comments? I always think, is anybody there still? Did that make
sense? So what you said about the foot level.
Yeah.
Dorsiflexion.
Yeah.
Being an orthotic lady.
Yeah.
Anyone who's hypermobile to the knee would benefit from a higher heel.
Right, yeah.
Slightly. Because it stops them from...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, no, Nikki. So say when you were doing that squat, if you'd put like just a small rolled up mat under your heel, it would have become 10 times easier. And that's something you can do. So what I'd say there, Nikki, is pick your battle. So when you look at her, what needs to be more stable and what needs to move more? So, for example, the knees need... So if she has that little lift, great, because that will help her find a better position through the knee. Do you know what I mean? So for that, yeah, if that's what she's been given, then definitely. And as I say, if somebody's struggling with their dorsiflexion at the ankle, if you just put a little lift in there, they'll be able to sink better in the hips, get better flexion to extension, better knee support, and then it might be outside of our scope to help her with the, do you know what I mean, with the rest of it. But go with what she needs, because, you know, we want her to be moving, and she probably loves to have her shoes on, does she? Does she come?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but what we want her is to be moving in that really nice position with the stability through the joints. So, yeah, but, and I would just get her, you know, squatting down, but keep the shoes on. Or give her that little lift. You know, if you're doing... if you're doing reformer work with her, Nikki, you know, get something just... If she's doing standing work, get her, you know, with just a little cushion or something just under the heel. Because that will just change the move for her and she'll feel so much better.
Okay, cool.
Yeah?
So I do squatting at the end of my class, how I get people... standing through a squat, but I did find, obviously, I think I don't get the feet wide enough.
Yes.
Because I've got the numbers, I have 30 clients, about 2 people place their heels on the floor. So I'm thinking I'm not saying, okay, it's not as well. I think my feet are.
Yeah, exactly. Let them place their feet, Susie. Do you know what I mean? Let people go to where their feet allow them to go. As I say, what you can do is roll up the mat, you know, just the end of their mat, and let them put their heels on it. And you'll find an amazing difference. If that really helps them, you know the restriction is around their ankle. It could be elsewhere as well, but do you know what I mean? A lot of the time, it's around the ankle where the restriction is. And that's why, you know, being able to use reformer and so on is so great to help with our ankle and foot mobility. But let them take their feet wider and let them turn out slightly as well, so that they can access that. Yeah. And try that spiraling with them.
Yeah, I love that. That really helped me.
Yeah. It takes a bit of thought and it can be a bit, whoa, at first. But I've been doing it for a while and it feels great now. You're like, oh, and it's the same thing that happens at the shoulder as you take the arm forwards, that spiraling through. And yeah, it's really good when you start thinking about it through the body.
When I get squat, I tell you to lift up so the thighs are pretty little, you get them kind of hanging to my leg.
Yeah. So almost the next progression, once they can squat down better, is have them put their arms over their heads.
And have a stretch.
To come up. Because that obviously will bring that will bring their spine into that lengthened position, and then they have to lift up to come up. Does that make sense? Rather than putting them forwards, and if anything, if they can't get them there, put them behind their back. Because obviously when we put them forwards, we round forwards. So instead of bringing them forwards, get them to just put them behind their back or down by their sides. Do you know what I mean? That position that helps them then lift upright. But ideally, I'll have to try and do something on something where I can video it for you to sort of show you how you can teach this in sort of some nice stages. I'll have to try and grab somebody and do that, because I think, yeah, it's so much part of what we should be doing. We just don't. So I definitely put it into the classes. And just, you know, it doesn't matter if it doesn't look pretty to begin with. You know, we can work on that. But as I say, always give yourself time to just look where the restriction is or the compensation. And then can you cue them? Can you give them a prop? Can you do something to help them overcome that strategic restriction that they use to create their movement? And that's then our job done. So unless there's any other questions, does anybody else want to ask anything else? No. Was that good? Has that given you some different things to think about?
Yeah, brilliant.
Okay, good. Well, as you know, you can always email